And welcome everybody on YouTube to Off the Hook Overtime. Let's make sure we all made it. Kyle, you're with us?
Yes, I'm right here.
Rob, Gila, did you make it?
We're here.
Awesome. And are we actually on YouTube? That's always a good question. We are, okay. And who has, all three of our guests are with us, and I think we lost Alex. Is that true?
Yes, that is indeed.
Exactly
the case.
Okay, all right.
Alex had to step away and sleep in, Slovenian bed, so that's fairly complex, I'm given to understand.
He'll do anything to avoid overtime, won't he? He'll go all the way to Slovenia. Wow. Well, staying on with us, we have our special guests from the Veiled Project. And I want to make sure everybody, if I made it as well, we have Dildog, we have Medusa, and we have the Gibson. You're welcome to give us a call if you have any questions concerning this amazing new thing that's being designed right now. Our phone number, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. I got it right, didn't I?
Yeah.
You did.
So anybody have anything else they wanted to add? Go ahead, Rob.
No, I'm just, like, people, the chatter going on our socials during the show and everything, people are rather excited about this whole thing, as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
It's great that you could all join us. It's great that you could all hang out for this this after show. And folks out there, if you have questions for the Veiled crew, the Gibson, Christian, Dildog, Ryu, or Caitlin, Medusfor, Bowden, sorry. Call myself there.
Am I supposed to pronounce the four? Am I supposed to pronounce the four? I say Medusa. I don't know how to inject the four.
It's okay. It started as Medusa, but I don't speak Leet. I speak user. So now it has become Medusfor, and I'm really enjoying watching everybody's reaction to it because they get very angry.
People have to get angry at something, so yeah, why not? This is something to really get angry about, though, and it's a story I didn't get to in the previous hour. It's called Verifying Your Identity on Twitter Will Now Require Taking a Selfie, and this just speaks to all the things we were talking about. They're basically trying to verify users' identities, and what that involves is submitting a selfie alongside government-issued ID, and then having all of that forwarded to some company in Israel that is going to verify your identity. It's Twitter, for God's sake, or X, if you want to be really silly. And it's really turning into a nightmare. I mean, the Internet used to be completely anonymous if you chose for it to be anonymous. And if you wanted to reveal yourself, then, okay, that's your problem. But this just seems to be coming the norm lately.
Yeah, my problem with all this
that's
is
a hard no.
Yeah, it is a hard no. Hard no for me as well. You know, it used to be that people trusted people. And that's how you built trust networks, is individuals trusting each other. When you start seeing these things creep in, what they're asking you to do is trust Twitter. And then Twitter will tell you who to trust. It's a man-in-the-middle attempt by these big corporations to inject themselves into personal trust networks. Completely unnecessary. You know, if you can just talk to people and invite people you trust and talk to people you trust and don't talk to people you don't trust if you don't want to, why should there have to be anybody in the middle mitigating and mediating your trust? You know, it's only a side effect of the construction of these networks that any of that's even needed. You know, we got along just fine, you know, making friends in real life and then talking to each other and deciding who we wanted in our circles and who we didn't.
Go ahead, Gil.
Gibson,
if you want to keep going, we have our first question out of the YouTube chat.
Go ahead. Yeah, look, that verification man in the middle that Chris was speaking about, this is an attack on human free will and humanity in many ways, right? Ultimately, we should be able to make these choices for ourselves. And having that clearinghouse in the middle of this is offensive to me. It should be offensive to everybody, but most people are willing to go with that because it's inexpensive for them to trust, and they can kind of offload that decision-making process. But the truth of the matter is, you know, we have to be responsible for who we are and who we choose trust, right? And those decisions should be on each one of us individually. But when we have a system like this, that takes away that ability to make that choice. So, you know, like I said, hard no, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Gila.
I mean, I was just going to say I was looking at the article, and I can't believe you don't want to give Twitter your biometric data. Anyway, the question, because you have to let them keep your biometrics. Okay, if all users are nodes is a question, what is the impact and performance like for mobile devices whose routes go through mobile user nodes?
Well, that's a great question. Valid's internal routing table is mostly a statistical exercise to figure out what nodes are up, with what frequency, how reliable they are, how stable they are, how frequently they switch around to their IP address and their dialing information. So that's sort of Valid's job, is to figure out what is the best, most private routes you can go through and maintain connectivity. If your node, for example, is a mobile device and it is on Wi-Fi and it seems like it's been there for an hour, we kind of expect that it might be there for another hour. If it's only been there for a minute, then we probably aren't going to route anything through you until you've proven that you're going to be stable and at that same IP address for a while. In general, though, we also keep a whole bunch of routes allocated in the background. So Valid is sort of a call and response protocol at the base. We can send over one route, and if it goes down, we know immediately and we can switch to the next one. So we have like this backlog of prepared routes ready to go. And when routes disappear, we just switch to the next one and it's already there. So we kind of have some sort of a bits in our algorithm for the route allocation that make dealing with high churn environments less problematic.
Okay, thank you.
Fabulous. Well, I have a question. Now, we've talked about the reaction so far from people like us. Have you gotten any kind of a reaction from the people we're talking about, namely people in the industry that live for tracking and recording IPs and basically turning the internet into some kind of a commercial mall where everybody knows who you are?
Not so at DEF CON, we had a couple of interesting interactions, but not directly in regards to that, but with people who represented some of the larger organizations you would expect to have a stake in this. And, some of the questions were very interesting because they were unexpectedly kind of, could this be used to reduce cloud cost? And I know we talked about that earlier, but that's a little ways off in the future for the scale they're talking about, in my opinion. But we also had people from other ones seeing ways to secure relatively insecure authentication methods and such that their companies may use by using this routing capability to mask that. So it's been very interesting. We haven't had anybody directly come to it, at least not to me yet, about the data economy, if you will. But we have had people check in with us wondering if this could be used in kind of innovative ways for business that I don't think I planned on having those questions come at me, but certainly we lit some ideas and some people in unexpected places.
Go ahead, Gila.
Next question off of the live chat. Someone asks, direct quote, does Valid work through the Great Firewall of China?
We are excited to find out.
Yeah, we haven't actually tried. I'm unaware of any nodes running in China at this point, but that doesn't mean that it hasn't happened. Side effect of running a giant private network is I don't know where all the nodes are. We have some idea, and we have some people working on, some rough mapping technology that might be able to give us some idea of where nodes are at, generally speaking. But I can't confirm that as of yet.
Again, our phone number, 802-321-4225. Do we have a call, Kyle?
No, not yet.
And our phone line is open, so if you want to speak to our friends here from Valid, this is your opportunity. And I think we have more online questions?
Okay. Keep them coming, guys. Who stores this routing table information? Would this allow someone to track users' IPs across multiple connections?
Who stores the information? Well, every node has their own view of the Valid network. Not every node is going to be able to reach every other node. In fact, I'd say that the routing table itself probably caps out at about 256 nodes per node. So you only get a view of a small part of the network, but that's all you really need to be able to construct your own routes. You only need a couple nodes to hop through, really. And if you pick ones that are, you know, fast but geographically dispersed, you're going to be bouncing around all over the place, and, you know, your communications themselves are end-to-end encrypted on Valid. So, you know, it doesn't really there's nothing about Valid's construction right now that prevents people from knowing that you are running Valid. Like, if you were to do a network scan, yeah, we use port 5150, and you could probably find Valid nodes out there right now, but you wouldn't know what they were doing. And you wouldn't know who was using them. There's no connection between a node ID and your actual identity. That is a completely broken link. So, yeah, you're going to see nodes online. That said, you know, we know where all the Tor nodes are in the world today as well. You just don't know who's using them or for what. But you know if people are running a node. The same is true for Valid. You know, you use the internet, you're going to have traffic on the internet. That said, that we've also got some projects right now to see if we can make it even a little bit harder to detect, making us look more and more like random data, randomizing ports and things like that. But basically, you're going to stick out running Valid a little bit right now unless you look just like regular HTTPS traffic going to all of the regular sites that you would go to. You know, if you're sniffing the network, it's going to look like a different kind of thing than most people's regular web traffic. We can't really do too much about that right now. I mean, there's steganographic stuff. There's a whole field of research around having Valid or any other thing become deniable. There's a big difference between deniability and anonymity. Deniability says that you can say that you weren't even using it and people can't prove otherwise. Anonymity says that you can say, I wasn't the one using it. It could have been anybody. And that's the difference between sort of node level identity and user level identity. And we are anonymizing that user level identity.
Interesting. Wow. Go ahead.
Oh, we're caught up.
I had a question. Does increased use of it perhaps discourage further surveillance from corporations? In other words, if more people were using this kind of software, assuming things go great, would it have an effect, do you think, on the affordability? I think you mentioned that a little bit, like making the cost of this just rampant spying or dragnet stuff so high to make usable that it's not worth it? Sort of taking the floor out.
That was one of the original, you know, design concepts that we had going on, was we wanted to disrupt the data economy itself. If we give users the option to, you know, opt out of having their data scraped and sold, then we hope that it will kind of destroy that economy on its own. That is one of the ideas here, is just giving people the option and hoping that they understand what that means, and also helping them realize the value of the data that's being taken from them. What is the value of their privacy, and what does that mean exactly? We've been doing a lot of educational work around that so that people can make the right decision when the time comes, and we do hope to upend that economy.
Also, one of the things that in theory will happen as we get a density of nodes starts to grow, we should see the cost of running the network itself, which is effectively zero still because everybody's kind of distributing it. But those resources should go up. The speed of the network theoretically could go up. And the privacy of the network should get better as more nodes come online because you're going to have more randomized routes.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of where I was going with it. So, yeah, that that answers a lot of where I was headed. So thanks for clearing that.
I believe we have a phone call.
Yeah, there's a call on the line.
Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello, Emmanuel and Mom. Well, Ben's now. I'm on YouTube radio here. But anyways, about the obfuscating the, like, you actively run a Valid node, would you be able to, like, you know, barring the given latency with it, could you, you know, route that through, like, a WireGuard connection of VPN and, you know, sort of not have to worry about being seen as running a node?
Well, something is going to be seen as running a node. It'll be the other end of your WireGuard. So something is going to be seen as running a node as it connects to the network. But, yes, in theory, you can tunnel. If you tunnel at the layer 2, you know, then, yes, anything that you want to do could be passed over a VPN if you wanted to. I've accidentally done it. I thought I was running a Valid node from a hotel room just to test on the wild, you know, crazy hotel networks that exist out there, and found myself that I had accidentally been routing it all over my VPN to my house. It worked great. I had no trouble running it over, you know, OpenVPN or whatever I was using at the time. And, yeah, transparently worked over a VPN without any trouble. Unfortunately for me, it made me feel pretty dumb because I didn't realize that it was actually tunneling from my house until I was wondering what the heck was going on. But, yeah, no, it does work.
I can confirm that finding.
I'm sorry, Carl, go ahead.
I was just saying that may be a good sign that, you know, that it was pretty seamless and, you know, didn't...
Yeah, painless.
Worked
great. Yep, just tunneled. You can tunnel. If you can tunnel your interface, you could have your Valid node appear from wherever your endpoint is.
Cool. Also, one more question. What brand of hot dogs did you throw at us?
Those were kosher Hebrew National beef franks.
You know, for those of us who weren't there, I'm not sure if we want to know what this is all about, but that's part of your presentation, I guess.
So a few weeks before we were going to give the presentation, our esteemed colleague, Duff Veggie, that's Mr. Vegetable. No, wait, that's not Mr. Vegetable. He started
Hair
joking.
Hair Dr. Vegetable.
Uh-huh.
Hair Dr. Professor Death Vegetable.
He got the doctorate. Good for him.
Yes. So he started talking in our private chats about, we had a rule set up way back when we first got in touch with DEF CON to do this because of an incident from back in like 2002 or three, where they said, no raw meat. You can't throw any raw meat into the crowd. and we all kind of said, what? Oh, okay, sure.
Why was that? Okay.
Well, it may have happened in the past that some raw meat was thrown into the audience. You had to be there.
But that means you could have thrown cooked meat at the crowd then. That would have been okay.
That technically hot dogs are cooked.
Well, that was the idea.
Oh.
Hot dogs are pre-cooked.
They are pre-cooked.
So, one of the best things to come out of this was somebody who got one of these packs of hot dogs made the most quote-unquote cursed DEF CON badge ever by slapping a CDC sticker on one and attaching it to his lanyard. And so we got to be part of Badge Law.
Wow. Does that answer your question, caller?
Yes, sir. And, man, saw it out there. Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you all very much. Look forward to running a node.
Cool. Thanks for calling. And our phone number, 802-321-4225. Go ahead, Gila.
Okay. Two more questions have come in. First one, does Valid use post-quantum algorithms for encryption?
Not today. Today it uses a Curve 25519-based algorithms, as well as Blake 3 for hashing. These are properly strong for the kinds of use that we have today. But we have built in crypto upgradability into the protocol. So in the event that a practical post-quantum crypto system is implemented by cryptographers that we trust. It's the kind of thing that could be slipstreamed into Valid as a crypto system without any of our apps or developers having to do anything differently. So, you know, I know this is a hotbed of crypto research right now. thinking about what to do when quantum computers change the game for the mathematics behind cryptography and cryptanalysis. So we're prepared for that as soon as the cryptographers out there are prepared for it.
Awesome. Okay, that was one. Here's two. You talked a little bit about traffic obfuscation. Are you familiar with V2 Ray / ShadowSox, and are you going to try to implement their techniques?
I am not familiar with those. I've studied a bunch of things. We are looking at Elligator, Elligator, as a way to make our traffic look like completely random data. So if you want to look up Elligator, that's currently our focus right now is looking at that. That may end up being a sidecar obfuscator for Valid.
Okay.
Go ahead, Rob.
All right. While we're waiting for our next call, someone on Mastodon is taking issue with our claim during the radio hour that Tor runs 100 that the NSA runs a large amount of Tor exit relays. They're citing a talk from CCC Camp 23 by Tor Project. And, of course, we can't watch the video while broadcasting, so I can't address what specifically they're talking about. But that is being disagreed with.
That's fair. We've been working with the information that we have. We love Tor. We're not here to tear down Tor or talk smack about Tor. We're only acknowledging the fact that Tor has a really big gap to fill when it comes to its users, its end users, and, you know, the technology itself. And it has a marketing issue, to be frank. Those are the only things that we really have said anything negative against Tor. We didn't know that, but thank you for sharing, and I will watch that talk afterwards. And we're always open to learning something too.
Well,
so our apologies.
I mean, what I'm curious about is it at least conceivable that the NSA could run a Tor exit node? And if it is,
absolutely,
why not 100?
It is conceivable, and you know, while we obviously can't prove it, they wouldn't be doing their job if we could.
Well, we could call the NSA and ask them, but I don't think they'll tell us.
Exactly. You know, you're not going to know for sure. But if I go right now and I look up all of the exit nodes that I can find, there's a map of Tor exit nodes. I can find some odd 100 running out of the Isle of Man off the coast of England right now in some data center that, you know, sure as heck looks like, I don't know, it looks like a concentration point for this stuff. And I can't tell you, you know, that that's what it is, but, you know, any kind of concentration on a map of exit nodes is going to give me kind of pause a little bit, mm-hmm. You know? Again, doesn't have to be the NSA. You know, that's just sort of a straw man, boogeyman here. It could be anybody. It could be the mob. It could be anyone who has a vested interest in understanding and monitoring Tor. Right.
That's meant to be a good thing, though, that anybody can do this. So NSA, they're anybody like anybody else is, so they could be doing this as well. It applies to anything, really.
Yeah, I mean, so in general, I think that kind of correlative analysis is something that we have to fight against. I think Valid's model of keeping as much as possible in-network rather than being a generalized internet proxy is going to have an effect over time of making things a whole heck of a lot harder to correlate. You're not going to have external signals as well as internal signals that you can put together. It'll all be in network, and it won't be obvious where the endpoints of communication are. You know, if it could be that you're in the middle of a route, it could be that you're at the end or the beginning. It's going to be a lot harder to monitor unless you're monitoring a whole lot more devices, and it's going to become very prohibitively expensive to do.
All right. I'm just going to invite people, give us a call. Get to a phone and dial U.S. phone number 1-802-321-4225. That's 802-321-HACK. And thanks to the Gibson, who had to take off for the evening. But we've still got Dildog and Medusa 4 here to answer your questions.
I didn't know who left because we can't see them. So somebody left, but I'm glad you clarified that. Go ahead, Gila.
Yes. So another question, which I'm again going to assume is aimed at Dildog and Metasphor, because they're the ones with the answers. If an app Unveiled is doing something problematic, can you stop it from proliferating itself?
Not really. We don't really have any control over what Veiled nodes do. There's no... it's quite possible that Veiled as an organization someday may not even run its own nodes at all. And we do just because, you know, I help making this framework and stuff. But it's going to be the apps themselves that are going to be responsible for the content of what their apps enable people to do. We don't have any kind of policing capability over this network. All we can do at this point, and we've released it to the world, there's hundreds of nodes out there right now. I can't tell with those nodes what to do. You know, I can't tell what they're doing, and I can't tell them no. So if you're going to write a Veiled app, we request that you make an effort to adhere to the Veiled code of conduct and try to build apps that are for everybody. And, you know, we're trying to build community that builds responsible applications. We encourage this behavior. We acknowledge that not everyone is going to want to do that. But that is a general social problem and not something that Veiled can do much about. We don't really have any kind of authority over that.
Right. A code of conduct for apps, that's something.
It would be nice if, you know, people built apps that, you know, we're built in an open, respectful community. That said, you know, we willingly acknowledge that, you know, when you put code out in the world, people are going to do what they want with it. We're trying to move the needle toward respectful communities. But, you know, the world is what it is. We're not going to change, you know, all of the social paradigms that exist out there today. We know what we stand for. It's on our website, and we hope that people will follow us and we encourage that kind of development, you know, ethos. But we'll fully acknowledge that people come in all stripes, and different colors, different attitudes, and you know, we're not the police of application development at all. We just write a tool, a framework, and ask that people try to use it for good.
But we aren't also going to be quiet if someone is using it for bad. One of the nice things about not having, VC money or things like that is we don't have to cater to anyone telling us, oh, well, just don't make waves. We're gonna be obnoxious and be a thorn in the sides of people that are trying to use this for bad, and I'm not afraid of that. We're building a community of people that we are encouraging to take ownership of, you know, this whole project. Feel like it's your own. Build on it. Have fun with it. It is all based on what the community is, you know, wanting to do with it. And the community is going to self-select. And if you do allow people to take ownership over the project, they're going to protect it too. And I think that matters. I think that the community that we are building of people that care, that see the vision, that understand what's at stake here, are going to, you know, make this happen in the way that we are hoping it's going to happen. Or it may take another route, but if either way, I believe everybody is here for good. I believe in the good of people, and I'm not going to give up on that.
That's a great starting point, at least, until they prove otherwise. You know, give people the benefit of the doubt, and hopefully we get the best of the people.
Yeah, we don't have to remain quiet for fear of, like, our funding drying up. We wrote this for free. It costs us nothing. We'll say what we want, and there's, you know, it's not like it's going to hit us in the wallet.
Mm-hmm. That said, has anyone tried to talk you out of this?
The only feedback and I'm going to let some people remain anonymous here, but the only feedback that I've gotten that was somewhat negative came from people that had a vested interest in the data economy and from cryptocurrency folks who feel that, you know, blockchain solutions and smart contracts and, you know, putting, you know, transactions at the base of everything is the way forward. So I'm not gonna highlight those projects or those people, but I can say that the biggest pushback we've gotten was from either big data collectors or people that we know that work at them, or from the cryptocurrency folks who feel that you know, the way forward is monkey pictures and whatever.
And I have heard, I've seen a little bit of pushback. This is simply on a home front here. But, you know, my husband is also involved in the project, JC. And when we went to our parents and we started telling them about this, they both, you know, both sets of parents were like, wait, so there's no money? You're not making money off of this? Why are you doing it? And that's kind of the only people that have really tried to talk us out of it in any way, shape, or form is just people that, you know, don't really understand the point of doing this without, you know, monetization.
You know, talking to that and some of the other things you mentioned, I just want to quote from your frequently asked questions section of your website. Is Vela looking for funding? Answer, Vela is not seeking venture capital or investment. We are accepting tax-deductible donations to our nonprofit foundation, Valid Foundation, Inc. Does Valid have a cryptocurrency? Heck no. Valid does not have a cryptocurrency. Does Valid use AI? Heck no. Valid does not use AI. Does Valid use blockchain? Heck no. Valid does not use blockchain. First of all, I think it can be stronger with the language there, but, yeah, good for you for standing your ground.
So those are all things that, you know, sort of ensconce a level of classism into programming and into development. And we didn't want to build a framework where people had to pay to play. You know, use a blockchain, at some point you're going to pay for gas. You're going to pay for transactions. You're going to have Bitcoin. You're going to have your users sign into a wallet. To me, that just rubs me the wrong way. There's a whole lot of investment people already, you know, did when they bought a giant $1,000 iPhone. You know, it's a slap in the face to require everybody to hook up their wallet to do basic communications, even basic storage. I mean, there's stuff that we take for granted, like, you know, Valid has storage built into it. Not a ton of storage necessarily, and it's not as guaranteed as, you know, your favorite backup service, but, you know, there's a lot more that can be done for free or cheap that, you know, is being aggressively monetized today by a lot of other solutions.
The most investment we've put into this is time, and that's all we're asking of anyone else, time and energy and passion and putting your skills to use. And I think that should be the cost here for anything. I mean, you're spending time on an app. You're giving your time and energy to, you know, billionaires who are just funding cage fights with each other or sending each other into Mars. So that is the currency that I feel matters more than anything else, is the time, the energy, and, you know, our entire lives are put on the internet. And that's, to me, the most important, you know, commodity that we're working with.
Okay, we have gotten a bunch of questions for our guests, but just wanted to share something interesting that apparently happened during the show that we didn't know about because we didn't hear it.
Uh-oh.
But apparently the emergency alert tones went off during the show for about 15 seconds.
Really? Well, you see, we don't hear those. So
exactly. This is what I'm saying. So over the web stream. Seems okay.
Wait, just the tones, or is it a test?
It seems to be just the tones. People have only mentioned hearing the tone.
But we've gotten mentions of it both on Mastodon and in the street, in the chat. So
that means there's an emergency of some sort, but the way the system is designed, they don't tell you what the emergency is.
or somebody hit the wrong button, or our robot overlords have arrived, and, you know, Earth, it's been nice knowing you. Thank you, everybody, for clarifying just the tones. Okay, so several questions have come in, and I'm just going to take them in the order in which they arrived in the chat.
I mean,
so
that,
question
that
number
debate's
one.
Coming up at 9 o'clock. That, do you think that could be that, you know, the Republican debate? That might have triggered somebody.
That's totally fair. Okay, first question. Is anyone in the community working on BSD or Haiku support to run Valid nodes?
The answer to that is yes. I actually just had a conversation with someone today doing a free BSD port. It is early. We have Linux support today. Obviously, there's low-level operating system differences there, especially around network interfaces, but they are working on it, so that's the long answer. The short answer is yes, absolutely. People are working on it. If you want to join in, join our Discord and work with them.
Okay. So the next answerable question, philosophically, the human rights aspect is interesting. What benefits do you think could work for people who live in a place with repressive governments?
I think that this will be the answer to their communication needs. We've seen people over in France that were, they were holding protests against some aspects of their government, and their internet got shut off, and suddenly they weren't able to connect with each other or talk. I believe it was France. It's been a bit of a blur the past few months, to be completely honest. So, but I do remember that there was some protests happening where people's, you know, ability to connect with each other and organize online was cut off. And this is going to be one of those things that isn't going to be necessarily able to be cut off so easily, because it's not going to be the typical networks that people are used to. The typical networks that people are used to, and it's not the typical networks that the government necessarily has access to. I foresee this as being a net positive for those who are living in those circumstances, and we are excited to see what comes of that.
From a pragmatic standpoint, the fact that this is end-to-end encrypted is a big deal. People on our Discord are actively working on hardware and embedded nodes, so putting it on smaller and smaller hardware, which is going to enable it to be used in, like, ad hoc mesh networks. Right now we use the public internet as an overlay routing domain, but Valid also internally has support for other routing domains like local networks, Wi-Fi only ad hoc networks and things like that, radio networks, et cetera. So I, you know, as Valid matures, I think you're going to start seeing a lot of the sort of ad hoc network creation stuff immediately being able to just work with all the apps that people have built. So, you know, the fact that you, if you have Valid chat and you're just used to using it on your regular home Wi-Fi, but then you go and take it into a protest zone, it'll still work even if they cut off the internet, because you'll be routing through all of your friends, and maybe one of those people has a connection to the internet still, or just talking amongst the people that are there. I think the construction of the network is going to enable a whole lot of interesting developments in the ad hoc networking space.
Also, want to correct myself, it was not France, it was Iran. Where they did cut off the internet to those protesting.
Not very similar countries.
Well, in their handling of encryption policy, they're actually kind of similar.
Okay.
It's kind of sad that that's the case.
Well, I think most governments want that kind of encryption policy or kind of communication policy. They want to be able to control people. They want to be able to watch over people. I don't know of any country that doesn't wish that, even if they don't say it publicly.
That's true.
Government, that is. Okay, we have some shy people, I think, that are afraid to call, so we're just going to issue the number one more time. Hopefully somebody will give us another call, 802-321-4225, 802-321-4225. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be a technical whiz. You can ask any question you want or just reveal anything that you want to share with us. 802-321-HACK is the phone number, but we're only going to be on for a few more minutes, so please give us a call if you have something to say.
I do have a question for our listenership. We are getting the sense that the emergency tones were played on the simulcast on the live stream. If anybody actually heard us on the actual FM radio, if you could let us know if you heard the tones. Now we're just curious.
I hear sirens as you're saying this. What's going on in Queens there?
We live like two blocks from a hospital. Or, you know, the world is on fire, robot overlords. So
the world is on fire. It's been documented.
All of this is true. But yes, folks who were listening on the actual radio, in your car, your alarm clock, what have you, if you heard the tones on the radio, please give us a holler. Also,
wouldn't the radio be the only place where emergency alert tones would be sounded?
Apparently, people heard it on the live stream. They heard it on their Amazon devices. Huh. They heard it on the website. So now I'm curious. Also, someone wrote in, and I'm going to absolutely butcher this word. Thank you for calling. Okay, apparently it was on the radio as well. Someone says, just join the show. Are we speaking about the Cybico? Page 56, 2600, volume 40, number 2 from 2000.
We expected to just call that up. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't write some. I just read them. I don't know.
Like they're referencing an article from 20 years ago?
23 years ago.
Yeah.
Which is weird because
I think I loaned that issue out, so otherwise
volume
I'd check it
40,
right now.
Number 2 was pretty recent. But I understand nothing.
You said 2000.
Yeah, what was the 2000? Is that a type of equipment? Is that a model number?
Okay. I am going to copy this and paste it into our chat so you guys can see, because apparently I murdered the syntax. And if anybody wants to call us, by the way, and
We have a caller.
We have a call?
Yes.
Great.
So calling us now, you'll wind up being transferred someplace and we can't get you back, so... Let's say hi to this caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi.
Hey. How you doing?
Good. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know. I've listened to you guys on and off for, I guess, like 2 years now. I guess just whenever I have time. I've never called in. I don't know. Felt like it today. So, hi.
Welcome.
Yeah. Hi. Just out of curiosity, is there any reason to switch to Valid Chat from Signal right now? Just because I try and use Signal as a private messaging app, and I mean, other than the lack of SMS verification as, you know, being required.
Yeah, I mean...
Well...
I don't know. First off, Valid Chat is not fully released yet, so I wouldn't switch to it because you're not going to be able to download it. But when it does show up, I encourage you to try it, see if it works for you. There are going to be some environments maybe where Signal is a better choice for the short term. We are designing it to be a full replacement for that. It does not require phone numbers or any other kind of identifier. It may make you a little bit harder to find as a result. You'll have to invite people over another medium. I would keep Signal around. There's nothing inherently wrong with it other than, the bit with the phone numbers. And I could say that there's been issues with them not choosing to encrypt certain things that were saved to your phone, like the attachments you receive were not being encrypted. There are some aspects of the app itself that I personally disagree with some of the choices that were made there. But for regular daily driver chat use, I'd say try them both, see how you feel about it. And, if there's ways that you want to improve Valid Chat, we're all ears. We'll make it the best chat program that we can. So
one, difference that I think is going to be key with between Signal and Valid Chat is we're not going to ask for access to your contacts. So your contacts aren't going to get a little pop-up letting them know that you have joined Signal.
Oh, that's so annoying. Yeah. That is so annoying.
That there is that. I forgot about that. Jesus.
Yeah.
We don't ask for anything
from your
phone.
I don't need to know every time one of my exes that I haven't spoken to in years has joined Signal. Thanks.
Or one of your exes thinks that you're sending them a message by saying you're on Signal, and then they contact you. That's the worst thing.
Or one of your dead relatives that still is in your contact list that had their phone number reassigned to somebody else. I mean, that's happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Signal is wonderful, and we've done a lot of our work communicating with each other through that medium. So we're not going to sit here and bash it. We encourage everybody to try it out and see what works for them. And we're also going to be taking community feedback. So if you see something that we can improve on, we hope you join the Discord and talk to us, and maybe we can make that happen.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to code at all. I want to learn.
Me neither.
No. So. Okay. Okay, so it's not like I'm going to be a problem. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be too tough, I promise. I am not a coder myself. A lot of the tech explanations about Valid go over my head. But I assure you, I will be testing every bit of it to make sure it is, easy for us regular folks to understand.
Cool.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Yeah. All right. See ya.
All right, Gila.
Bye.
Okay. We did get clarification. Thank you to listeners, Optical Phoenix and Knicker000, for clarifying. The Cybico, or Cybico, I don't know how to pronounce it, was a handheld personal messaging tool that was released in the year 2000, and you could
I remember that.
Ad hoc local networks for people close by.
Yeah.
And the picture on Wikipedia is purple. It's very spiffy, and apparently you could put a memory card into it and play MP3s. So the short answer is no, that's not what we're talking about, but thank you for that awesome blast from the past. And now I kind of want one.
I think we should be bringing back that colored plastic aesthetic myself. So I'm all about it.
Absolutely.
It's really real cyber deck vibes right there.
We have another call?
There is another caller, yes.
Another caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
I had two questions, actually. One about running a Valid node and one about Valid chat. About the Valid node, will there be a way to throttle the resources you contribute to the network, CPU, GPU, IPFS storage or bandwidth for people who are on metered connections or people who have limited resources? And Valid chat, will there be a namespace for users, or will there? Are you just going to be like a key pair, with session?
Okay, two questions. First one, yes. let me see. Let me get to the Valid chat question first. The as far as a key pair. Your key is only shared to the people that you contact. If you want to do it, the way this works is you create a contact invitation. The invitations are encrypted. The invitations are placed onto our distributed hash table. And the way this works is you basically pass a decryption key for that invitation to your friend over some other medium, so iMessage or Signal or whatever you choose. They're not getting the key to your node or to you or to your identity over that non-Valid medium. They're just getting a password, basically, that can be used to decrypt the invitation off of our distributed hash table. So when you connect with people, there's no such thing as a real a namespace per se. Everything is done on the main Valid network. That said, if you wanted to, You could set up your own Veiled network today. There is nothing special about any Veiled node. All of the Veiled nodes right now are on the main Veiled network, but you could set up your own Veiled network. And we do have this notion of network keying. So if you wanted to set up a private Veiled just for you and your friends, you could do that. That would allow you to run a group of nodes that is not connected to the main big, huge Veiled. Now, there might be security implications for that. Obviously, it's a pretty advanced use case. When you just run Veiled Chat by default, you are in the same namespace, if you would, as everybody else. Because there is no servers. Session does have this notion of servers. It's basically federated, not completely, distributed. Session also has this thing where you have to buy like $8,000 worth of their cryptocurrency to run a node because they don't want people just setting them up. We don't really subscribe to that. If that's what it takes to get their network up and running, it's fine. That's not how we choose to do it. And I didn't think I answered your first question. What was the first question again?
I was just asking, say if you were to run, a Veiled node, somebody were to be on a metered connection or had limited resources or would just like to have it running in the background and not have it affect their bare metal hardware very much, are you able to?
You could run a low resource node
on it.
Yep. Yeah. There's a configuration file. You can tweak how much storage. You can tweak what services you choose to offer if you don't want to do DHC storage at all, if you just want to do routing table stuff. You could also choose not to private route. You could turn on and off capabilities in the config file. So all of the limits and stuff like that are all tweakable. In a future release of Veiled, it's also going to detect whether or not you're on a metered connection, if you have on a mobile device, for example, and it's going to automatically throttle back those capabilities. Right now, if you're on a slower connection or you're on a symmetric carrier grade NAT, which is what you're going to get when you use a mobile device on a cellular network that's metered, it already throttles back today based on the type of network you're on. So if you're not on a static IP or a dynamic one that has UPnP like your home router, but you're on some kind of carrier grade symmetric NAT, it's going to notice it's automatically going to throttle back so it doesn't blow your bandwidth up.
Cool. Thanks for the answers. Good and concise. Appreciate it.
Yep. Cheers.
Thanks for your call. And going to get out the phone number one more time, 802-321-4225, but we're running low on time, so if you have any questions for our guests concerning Veiled and the future of the Internet and all sorts of other things, give a call now, 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Yes, Sheila, go ahead.
We got another one. How do you protect the private key on the device? Can it be placed in a YubiKey or similar secure element?
All right. I gave this a lot of thought. Right now, it is not. You cannot use a YubiKey or a external hardware token. The private key is encrypted with another key that is stored on, a mobile device in the keychain. And that itself can be encrypted with a password. So if you were to use a YubiKey, you could have it generate a password or something like that. But we don't have support for a time-based token or anything for that kind of unlock. That said, if you use the device protected store, the hardware protected store in your device, the keychain, and you do not back that up along with the rest of the your iCloud storage or whatever, you are protected from iCloud backup dump attacks and from attacks where people might try to siphon off your backups from, say, the Lightning port on your phone. They would have to crack the password that you use to unlock the device key that we bake into the protected store. So keychain or key store on Android or Windows protected store or Linux secret service, those all have hardware enclaves that they store those keys in. So that's the answer. we give it a lot of thought. Our threat model was, you know, backup attacks and, you know, making sure that when you back up your device that there's at least a password between the attacker that downloads your backups and their ability to get at your stuff.
Okay.
And we have another call, yes.
Okay.
Calls are coming in now. Good evening, you're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
All right. I just wanted to give you the heads up as a fellow techie. At about 48 minutes is when you had your emergency tone, and there was no warning beforehand and no warning after it.
Yeah, that's how they design these things. You're supposed to somehow know. You send across that tone, and if you're not digitally tied into what you're listening to, you don't have a clue. You know, it's another example of how, you know, the old days, the EBS system was very verbal. They tell you what it was. And EAS,
okay,
they just send out these tones, and they're supposed to activate something, but if they don't, then you're kind of left wondering just what the hell was that. It's really so. You know, we have a cable system. People who use Optimum might notice at 3 in the morning what they almost always do is just have a blue screen over all channels and PVRs that just say that they're testing a system for about 5 minutes, and you can't watch anything, and if you're watching something live, you're going to miss it. It's ridiculous, and they think that's how you're supposed to test the system, and it's not. It's not how the system works. Anyway, that's not what you call it.
And what do people do during the night shift if you're working the night shift? I have a question as well.
Go ahead.
I'm designing something that I believe is going to be really, really big, and I love what your female friend was saying before, that you all agree with, it's about the people and you don't want to have any money commandeering and stuff like that. I so agree. And I'm doing something along those lines. My only problem is I've had so many digital problems, and I've had a guy who was designing software for a specific thing that I found a secret. Take 3 problems from every person you know, and as I am a professional technician for 50 years, and I have a really good success rate. And I said, how would I fix it? And I've come up with something, and I want to design some software. And my software guy, who lived in Canada, bailed out and never called me back, and he sounded like a good guy until we almost got done. And then when he couldn't reflect the software to work right, I think he didn't really know what he was doing. He was a young guy. And then that was it. I never heard from him again. Would you happen to know anyone who can do software?
There's a lot of software development professionals out there. If you're looking for a contractor of some sort, you know, your best bet is to, you know, is to probably go through an app development service. There's a lot of those online. You know, personally, I roll my own. It's because I've been coding for, you know, 35-something years now. So I write all my own stuff, but I know there are a lot of contract programmers out there. You know, feel free to hit up LinkedIn and places like that for software development needs.
Also, just want to chime in to say that I'm sorry. That really sucks.
Yeah.
I'm a ham operator in the past. I'm sorry. I cut you off. I'm sorry, guys.
Wanted to say I'm sorry. That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
What were you saying, caller?
What would it take for me to interest the gentleman who was just speaking to be involved? If you're interested in things for people, I'm looking to do something on a very large scale, and I think if I was off air, I could explain it better, but I don't want to do it on air.
My recommendation is if you want to pitch ideas to Valid developers because you think Valid is a relevant technology, come join our Discord. We have a lot of places where there's a lot of people that program and a lot of people that have the same kind of ideals, and they might be looking for things to do with Valid. And if your idea lines up with some of their the people that are there, it's a very welcoming community. Feel free to join the Discord. You can find it on our website. Site on valid.com. Click in there and pitch your idea to some of the people some of our ideas channels. You know, we're always we'd love to hear about ideas people have for apps.
And again, that's valid, VEILID.com. That's the website. So thank you for that call.
Thank you. Keep up the great work, gang. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. And That's going to do it for calls tonight, because we had a bunch of them in the end. Gila, did you have more?
I do. This has actually been a very active evening on the chat. We've had people involved who have not been here before, so thank you very much. Okay, question number one. Will an MVNO add any issues?
I don't know what an MVNO is.
I'm so glad someone else doesn't. I was feeling so stupid.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea.
I Googled it. A mobile virtual network operator.
Of course. Oh, yeah, we all know that.
Is a company that does not own a mobile spectrum license, but sells mobile services under its brand name using a network of a licensed mobile operator. So this is basically subletting mobile network space so that, like, you know, FUBAR telecommunications could sell services, but it would actually be backhauled out to, say, Verizon. You know, for the actual mobile network. I don't think that's gonna, because this is an overlay network on top of the internet protocol, it's not really gonna matter what the underlying topology is. They're probably gonna use symmetric NAT because that's what all these, you know, big carrier grade networks do. We do support that completely. And, you know, it won't be the most, you know, feature-rich node that you're running, but, you know, it'll run all the apps that you care about without it being an issue.
Okay. We had one additional question that was actually answered in the chat, so we are going to skip it. So last one, before I say that, though, Tim in Connecticut, yes, if it had been the old way, they would have said, if this were an actual emergency, you would have heard news. We don't do that anymore. Okay, last question for our guests. How difficult would it be for a malicious coder to build a map of all Valid nodes? Could that have dangerous implications for people using Valid under oppressive regimes?
I'm sure it could. Right now, because the number of Valid users is somewhat small, would be like, you know, back in the 80s, you know, how many people had modems at home? You know, if you war dialed and you found people's home modems listening or something, it would be a pretty small population and then pretty easily exploited. You know, if you're looking for somebody in a particular area code that did a digital crime or something, you just look and find all the people who had modems at home and go hunt them up. It wasn't that common. The same is going to be true right now. People are building mapping mechanisms for Valid because the IP layer is not, again, not trying to be deniable. But when you start looking at having millions or hundreds of millions of nodes eventually, building a map of those 100 million nodes isn't going to get you much. It's just going to be like, oh, look, everyone who has a computer is using Valid. You know, as soon as we reach that level of, you know, saturation, it's going to be prohibitive to try to build a map of it.
I had kind of a follow on. I was curious what your thoughts were about, actors that create versions that are maybe intentionally broken in some way. And so, like, say it gets popular, say, you know, Section 702 gets reauthorized and everybody freaks out and all of a sudden they get popular. It turns out the popular one's broken, you know. So we all have, like, scenarios in our head, I think,
sure,
from even this show, talking about news stories of different apps, so on and so forth. So it just struck me that, are you auditing in some way? Is there a way that you're encouraging? I know you mentioned a little, you touched on a little bit, but how do you make sure that continuity throughout, like if it's in all different types of software that people are building, how are you even able to know? Is it just going to be naming and shaming that, hey, this is a broken, busted implementation of this, don't use it, or, you know, that kind of thing? How do you get the word out on what's good and what's really maybe a little shabby in the future?
Yeah, you know, it's going to be sort of like Linux, you know. You got this big kernel that's sort of like Valid core, you know. And then there's going to be distributions that show up where people have packaged it with some libraries that they like or whatever. You know, I liken it to the sort of Linux kernel. There are little forks that you can find of Linux. Your mileage may vary if you don't choose the big supported one. But there's a lot of distributions. There's a lot of different ways that it's packaged. I have a feeling that Valid is going to do for networking and cloud mobile modern software development, what Linux did for operating systems. It's going to democratize things. It's going to open it up. It will have a lot of the same problems in terms of like forks happening and whatever. But the one thing that we've got going for us is that no node in Valid has to trust any other node. So if you build an adversarial version of Valid that does bad things or, you know, doesn't perform the way you expect it to, other nodes are going to ban that node and not talk to it. So we've designed it for, adversarial nodes existing. And in fact, we encourage that. We have people on our Discord right now building adversarial node technology.
Wow.
And committing it to our repository because we believe in building a better, more secure Valid. We have people actively hacking our stuff and producing security advisories. We already have a CVE on the MITRE database for a bug that we had that we got fixed in 24 hours. So there's already a very hacker-friendly, adversarial development accepting ethos going on here. We're not going to wait around and hope people don't hack this. We're going to hack it ourselves.
Wow. I just love the phrase,
and
adversarial.
And actually, making trophies.
We are making
trophies for people that break it in the most creative way. I'm actually going to send them literal trophies to put on display. Wait, I am allowed to swear here, right?
Yeah, you can. Go ahead. Go for it.
Yeah, two.
I'm making fuck around and find out trophies.
There you go. Wow.
Because that is the scientific method. I'm encouraging people to fuck around with our stuff. Mess around with the code. See what you can do. That way we know what we're expecting when we get this stuff on apps and in the hands of everybody. We are really encouraging people to, think outside the box and be creative and be a part of this. And, yes, breaking it is a part of it.
Yeah, this reminds me so much of the early days of the net where it was all in front of us. And this is the kind of tone that we had, It was basically break something or, we'll make it better. It wasn't all about profit. It wasn't all about tracking. So I can't thank you guys enough for bringing that back, and I sure hope it succeeds.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Thank you. I mean, that's what we're here for. We hope.
Well, thanks, Dildog and Medusa. How do you pronounce the four?
Medusa.
Metasphor.
Metasphor. See, you changed it. syllables that way, too. Okay, and also thanks to the Gibson who had to leave before. And everybody else who called in and wrote questions, and, of course, Kyle and Rob and Gila and Alex, write to us, oth@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you with any thoughts or comments. If you have more questions, we'll forward them along.
We will follow the story, of course.
Absolutely.
And, any innovations.
We'll figure out what emergency is going on, where those crazy tones came across. I'm not sure if the archive will have that or not. I would believe that, but we might have an archive copy without it, or we might have the tones. Maybe people want to hear the tones. It's kind of cool.
If anyone else has any questions, we are super active in the Discord. I jump in voice chat all the time. I know Dill does as well, because this is a community. So feel free to join the Vela Discord and get a part of this. And together, I think we can take back control of our internet.
And how can people get to the Vela Discord?
Veilid.com, VEILID.com, and there should be a link right there on the Discord.
Cool.
Or to the Discord.
All right. Well, we'll be talking about this more in the future. I know it. So thanks for all you do, and best of luck for everything in the future.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good night, everybody. Bye.